Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. This weekend, lots of loving couples will paint the town red for Valentine's Day, perhaps ordering a glass or maybe even a bottle of wine or champagne to toast another year of relationship bliss. For many, it will be the only day of the year, maybe, that they actually order a bottle at a table or decide to blow a wad in a bottle for an at-home celebration. In that spirit, we've invited Karen McNeil to join us today. Karen is director of the wine program at the Culinary Institute of America in Napa Valley, California. Where else? She consults around the world and has written about wine for the New York Times, Food and Wine, Sunset, Savour, Fine Cooking, Wine Spectator, and other publications. Her book, The Wine Bible, came out a decade ago after writing it for a decade. She joins us now to talk about wine, buying it, drinking it, knowing it, and about her book, The Wine Bible. Today, Karen, welcome to the show.
Anne, thank you.
Really appreciate it. Now, you are speaking to us from Napa.
I am surrounded by vineyards right this very minute.
Okay, so we can kind of maybe channel a little bit of that into our conversation. Listeners, today is the second to last day of our winter fund drive, and we need to raise $10,000 by 7 p.m. today to put us in position to reach our overall goal for this drive. Make your pledge of support right now at 1-866-897-9678. Or go online at WOSU.org. Our gift to you today for this hour of All Sides is The Wine Bible. This book is a user-friendly guide that will help you choose wine with confidence. It's a big, fat book and a fabulous reference book. I've been reading it for the last couple days. Enjoy it very much. The Wine Bible has more than 900 pages with over 500 photographs, maps, and wine labels. There are also historical anecdotes, food pairing information, and great stories. This book is available with a pledge of $120 to WOSU. Call 1-866-897-9678 or visit WOSU.org and find out more about this book at the $120 pledge level. We're speaking today with Karen McNeil. She is the author of The Wine Bible. She's a wine expert, director of the Culinary Institute of America's Wine Program in Napa Valley. She knows wine. She's going to spend some time talking about it with us right now. If you want to sit and listen with a peace of mind, give us a call at 1-866-897-9678 and make that pledge right now. That's 1-866-897-9678. This is a fabulous thank you gift at the $120 pledge level. Karen, once again, I've been lugging the book around for a couple days. You know, I accidentally clunked my dog on the head with it last night when she was with me as I read before bed. So she's recovering nicely. But it is a huge book. You spent years and years working at it. How did you even begin?
Well, you know, on the one hand, yes, of course, it is a big book. But it's meant to be the only wine book you ever need. And I should say that because wine is sometimes intimidating to people, a book like this is never meant to, you know, sit down and read from beginning to end, though lots and lots of fans have told me that they've done that. But rather to be able, as you're drinking wine or if you're going on a trip to, who knows what, Oregon or Santa Barbara mm-hmm. this summer, to be able to flip to that section and learn everything you need to know about the wine that you're either drinking at the minute, at that moment, or going to be drinking. So when I started in the wine business about 30 years ago, and I was always very frustrated when I was learning about wine that there wasn't that kind of a go-to book. There was no place where you could get both simple and complex questions about wine answered. And so in a certain sense, and I think a lot of authors do this, I wrote the book for, putting myself, as I had been, actually, in the position of a wine novice.
I like how you you talk about, you ask the reader, hey, if you started eating sushi, you'd never had that before. You started eating, you only could eat peach ice cream for the first time once. You tried that. kind of likening the experience of tasting wine to that of tasting almost anything, that if you have a taste for anything, you can probably have a taste for wine.
Absolutely. You know, wine is just liquid flavor, really. It's no different than food. It's food is solid flavor and wine is liquid flavor. And really at the core of it, that's all there is. So what's interesting to me, though, is that people would never eat as narrowly as they drink. You know, no one would just eat chicken and carrots, almost no one, for the rest of their life. But when it comes to wine, people get into a sort of a habit. They drink Chardonnay every night or they drink Merlot every night. And that's a little bit like eating just carrots every night and missing out on at least the occasional mango or lamb chop or something. There are 5,000 different grape varieties in general distribution in the world. So that's a lot of exciting flavor out there.
You know, more and more Americans are looking to wine as an escape right now, and maybe it's not a good thing to do, but it is the sort of thing you can do for actually still pretty reasonable prices, particularly with some of the wines coming out of Chile and those sorts of places. But bottom line is, no matter what your budget is, it doesn't matter how much money you have to spend, it's still not necessarily obvious how to tell when you've got a good wine or not before you drink it. So how do you tell a good bottle from a bad one?
Well, you know, how do you tell a really great strawberry from one that's not so good?
Mm-hmm.
The truth is that, again, wine is very much like food in this regard. You try and buy the strawberry from the best market, and that's some insurance. And so, you know, if you buy wine at really dependable wine shops, that's a bit of insurance. But the truth is that it's an experiential product. You can't, there is no way to know if you're going to enjoy that wine until you try it. Now, that's both the bad news and the good news. I suppose you've got to try it, but how bad is trying it,
mm-hmm.
right? And in many cases, what you find is that you open a whole new door of flavor experiences to yourself. So even when I was a young woman in New York, desperately becoming a wine writer and desperately poor, I always had just a tiny, what I called wine adventure budget. And believe me, it was tiny. It was a few dollars a week. But, you know, I would find these little gems from Portugal or Romania even. I realized that I wanted to be able to have some wine that I knew I could depend on. But by giving myself just that little tiny wine adventure budget and not feeling like I had to like what I bought, I definitely expanded the whole universe of what I knew about and new flavors for myself.
You're listening to Karen McNeil. She's the author of The Wine Bible. Karen is a wine expert. She's been in the business for 30 years. She's poured her heart and her soul of wine into The Wine Bible. It is a big, fat book, as I said before. It's a must-have for anyone who loves wine and wants to know more about how to buy it and how to enjoy it. It is our gift to you today. Today is the second-to-last day of our winter fund drive, and we need to raise $9,800 by 7 p.m. today to put us in position to reach our overall goal for this drive. I know that if you're a public radio listener, you know how important this is. Make your pledge of support right now at 1-866-897-9678 or go online at WOSU.org. Give us what you can, but if you make a pledge at the $120 level, our gift to you today, The Wine Bible by Karen McNeil. Karen has been working on this for a long time. She continues to work on it. The book is a must-have if you love wine. Karen says that Sherry is the world's most misunderstood and underappreciated wine. You can learn more about that and more in this fantastic book. She's here to talk about it today. And Karen, why is Sherry so misunderstood, and does it have a good therapist?
it's an interesting story because in the days, literally in the days before central heating, wines from southern Spain and from Portugal, which were very rich and luxurious wines, would be sent to London, where it would be freezing cold. And, you know, they were the early, drinking those wines was the early form of sort of central heating. But over time, the British in particular began to import just the sweetest and cheapest sherries. And so flash forward to our country, we assumed that, you know, sherry was sweet and cheap and kind of the beverage of little old ladies who needed some warming up before they went to sleep at night. But in point of fact, sherry is one of the absolute great wines, not only of Spain, but of the world. There are all wine lovers eventually come down to the idea that the four greatest wines in the world are sherry, port, Madeira, and champagne. Those are the four most difficult wines to make. And frankly, if they weren't already invented, they probably would never be invented today because they're just too painstaking. But sherry comes in all styles, from bone dry to in fact sweet. And what I love about it is it's thoroughly unique, and it's probably one of the most complex wines in the world. There is absolutely nothing else like it. It's not like white. It's not, even though it's made from white grapes, it's not like a red wine. It really is sort of a whole flavor world unto itself.
Where does it come from?
It comes from the region called Jerez, which is spelled J-E-R-E-Z, in southwestern Spain. It's where Columbus sailed from when he made his voyage in the 1480s and eventually landing in America in 1492. And probably sherry was therefore the very first alcoholic beverage drunk in America.
You mentioned that sherry and champagne and Madeira and port probably wouldn't be made today if they hadn't been made before. I mean, they wouldn't be developed today. Are there new wines being developed? New grapes?
You can cross grapes, yes. Okay. You can create new varieties in the same way that you can cross, you know, a nectarine and a plum, let's say, and come up with a new fruit. So, yes, there are always scientific pursuits that look for new, that attempt to make new grapes that have good flavor and that grow well, especially in severe climates. There's a lot of that kind of scientific work going on. But what's interesting is that they're also natural genetic mutations. New grapes can occur in nature spontaneously. A well-known grape, for example, one that we all know well, is Cabernet Sauvignon. Well, Cabernet Sauvignon is the happy result of sometime about 500 years ago, Cabernet Franc and Sauvignon Blanc had a nice moment in nature, and the result was Cabernet Sauvignon. So grapes can also occur just by natural genetic mutation in nature.
Unfortunately, public radio doesn't happen naturally. We need our support of our listeners. We need it to be a very conscious effort on the part of our listeners to show their support by helping us out with their pledges. And it is our membership drive this week, and today is the second to last day of our winter fun drive, and we need to raise now still $9,680 by 7 p.m. today to put us in position to reach our overall goal for this drive. So make your pledge of support right now at 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Making your local radio station great is not an accident. It is not an accident of nature. It takes a lot of conscious effort, and it takes a lot of money. Give us a call with your pledge today, 1-866-897-9678, or go online to WOSU.org. When you go online to make that pledge, you can see a photograph of the cover of Karen McNeil's Wine, The Wine Bible by Karen McNeil. It is our gift to you at the $120 pledge level. It is a wonderful, user-friendly guide that will help you choose wine with confidence. And confidence is something that Karen McNeil wants to engender in you as a wine lover. Germany, Greece, the United States, and of course France and Italy have featured sections in the book, and also Chile, one of my favorites. Karen also discusses some great American wines from California, Oregon, and Virginia. She's on the phone with us now for Napa Valley, as a matter of fact. Karen, a little personal note, you met your spouse while you were researching for this book. Is that right?
I did.
It's kind of romantic.
Yeah. You know, as you were talking there, Anne, I was thinking about how important public radio is to me as well. And in fact, I recently, in the Napa Valley here, we have vineyards at all, at all altitudes. Mm-hmm. There's the valley floor, but a lot of vineyards are in the mountains. And I recently chose my new car based on how well I could receive public radio up in these obscure vineyards way up in the mountains, because I can't imagine a day going by without listening to all of my favorite programs on NPR and obviously on our local public station here, KQED.
Thank you for that lovely testimonial. I don't think I've heard that before. What kind of car did you end up buying?
I bought an Acura, which has a surprisingly good, strong radio so that I can pick up the KQED signal, even in these cavernous mountains out here.
You traveled around the world to work on this book as well. Where have you been?
I have gone to every major wine region in the world. I have not, the only major wine region I have not been to at this point is China. And China over the last 10 years has really emerged as a significant force in wine. We don't get very much Chinese wine here because it's virtually all consumed locally. But I think over the next 10 years that may change. And so I'm looking forward over the at some point over the next couple of years to getting to China and looking at the vineyards there.
You know, I've been joking a little bit on Facebook and Twitter today about my penchant for cheap Chilean wine, but you made a very validating remark in the book. You talked about how it is one of the best buys, the best values in wine. So it's not just my imagination. I can get a good wine from Chile for very little money. Why is that?
For a couple of reasons. Land is inexpensive there. It's a dry climate, and so farming is relatively easy there. The Chileans don't have to spend a lot on insecticides, on any kind of implements. I mean, it's a very natural, beautiful land for growing vegetables with in a fiscally responsible but also conservative way. It doesn't cost a lot to grow grapes there. And those savings get ultimately passed on to us as consumers. You know, what's interesting, though, is that at this moment in time, there are phenomenal values in wine all over the world. I mean, we all know the sort of the austerity mode, I suppose, that our country is in, and the difficulties that we've been through over the last year and a half. But I suppose the boon for consumers is that certain products, and wine is one of them, are more available at better prices than they have ever been. So, yes, on the one hand, places that traditionally have offered good values like Argentina or Chile, that is still true. But it's also probably one of the best times to snap up really fun Italian and French wines that you've always wanted to try.
It's also a good time to show your support for public media. Today is the second to the last day of our winter fund drive, and we need to raise, we're still at $9,680. I want to say thanks to Fred and Pamela in Fredericktown, and thanks to Patricia in Gahanna, and also Ann in Columbus. And thanks, Ron, from Westerville. We appreciate your support today. Our gift to you at the $120 pledge level is The Wine Bible by Kieran McNeil. She is my guest today on the program. We're talking about The Wine Bible, and we're talking about all the sorts of things that you can learn from it. It's really nice to have Kieran McNeil on the show with us to get a personal take on it. If you would like to speak with her, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Or email us, as usual, at allsides@wosu.org. If you would like to make that pledge now so you can kind of sit back and enjoy the conversation, give us a call at 1-866-897-9678. That's 1-866-897-9678. Or go to wosu.org and make your pledge online through our secure server. Give us a call right now. We're working on that big goal by 7 p.m. today. It started out at $10,000. We're down to $9,680. Thanks to everybody who have made their pledge so far. Give what you can. We appreciate anything. It's the best investment you can make right now is your pledge of support to WOSU. 1-866-897-9678 or go online at WOSU.org. Kieran, you talk about using food as a language when you go to shop for wine. And I wanted to talk about just buying wine and how to make it more comfortable for people, because you're very cognizant still of how stressful it can be if you don't do it very often.
Yeah. One of the things that I think differentiates the Wine Bible from other wine books is that many wine books are just, in effect, lists of, you know, here are all these wines from around the world, and here's the ones that the author likes best, and here are the ones that the author likes least. The Wine Bible is not like that at all. It's more like a good friend. I'm a teacher at heart, and of course a teacher at the CIA, at the Culinary Institute of America, and so this book tells you, in a sense, helps you in how to think about wine, how to know what matters and what doesn't. So in buying wine, for example, one of the strategies that I recommend to a lot of my friends is don't try to tackle the world all at once. You know, when you walk into a wine shop and you see here are 2,000 bottles from all over the world, I mean, how is anyone supposed to know what to do? Well, maybe one way to make this easier is to decide to start with just one country. And it doesn't matter what country. Let's just say you decided to start with Australia. Mm-hmm. So now every time you go into that wine shop, you simply, or that store, just always go to the Australia section. Don't worry about the 1,500 other wines there or the 1,800 other wines there. For 6 months, just get to know Australia. And you'll be surprised that if you stay within an area for an amount of time, after 6 months, you'll realize, my goodness, I actually do know something about Australian wine. You know, I know what varieties they offer. I've tasted a few of these wines. I have a sense of how much it costs and what it smells and tastes like. And only when you're then comfortable should you now move on and then tackle a whole other area and do the same thing. Now tackle Spain for 6 months or France for 6 months. And it's by breaking wine down into logical places and just concentrating on those that I think you can be less overwhelmed by that phenomenon of walking into the store and seeing all 2,000 bottles and wondering what you should do.
I like that idea. Is that sort of how you approached the book when you were researching for it?
Yes. When I was writing a given chapter, I would only drink wines of that region. So I would submerge myself in culturally, historically, sometimes gastronomically, and certainly from a wine perspective, only in that region.
Did you usually visit restaurants, or did you go right to the wineries? You actually worked in some of the wineries too.
Well, when you go to a wine region, and by the way, wine regions are some of the most wonderful places to visit because they're very heartwarming places. They're generous. The food is often good. They're beautiful regions. I mean, they're one of the very best ways, I think, to travel, including here in the United States. Mm-hmm. When I go to a wine region, and I like to go, by the way, I like to go at times like now. I like to go in February and November and times when a lot of people aren't in wine country. I find it very beautiful to go in the winter. But when you go, or when I would go, I always tried to submerge myself entirely in the culture. So I visit as many wineries as I can, but I also hang out in local restaurants and, really try and absorb the feeling of a place because, you know, what makes Bordeaux, Bordeaux is something more than just the wine. It's the way the people are. It's what they eat. It's their music. Mm-hmm. It's what they consider important. And all of that makes all of those details, I think, make the Wine Bible a richer book than most wine books.
Just want to remind the listeners, I want to get back to that. I want to talk with Kieran a little bit about why wine is the only beverage in the world that draws us in intellectually. But before that, I want to remind everybody that today is the second to the last day of our winter fund drive, and we need to raise left to go $9,440. We need to raise $10,000 by 7 p.m. today to put us in position to reach our overall goal for this drive. We have $9,440 to go, thanks to everybody who's contributed this hour, including William in Columbus and Leslie in Columbus. We appreciate all of it. Make your pledge of support right now at 1-866-897-9678 or go online at WOSU.org. Again, that number for pledge, 1-866-897-9678 or go online at WOSU.org and make that pledge through our secure server. Appreciate all your help, all your support. You know, no wine before it's time, and it's always time to support your public radio station, however. Give us a call, 1-866-897-9678. Kieran, talk a little bit more about that. You're sort of talking about the whole intellectual experience, but you make the point in the book that wine is the only beverage that draws us in that way. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to understand, really, how the mere juice of grapes could smell and taste like everything from, you know, pineapples to cowboy boots, right? Why is that? It's amazing how transformative wine is. And I think one of the reasons wine has historically been the beverage of religion is because it is very emblematic and symbolic of transformation, of something rather miraculous. I often say to my students at the CIA that, you know, here will be 36 or 50 people in a room, and I'm about to do a class for them 7 hours a day for a week we'll be together. And I will often say to them, you know, you wouldn't be here if this was vodka, right? No one would sit in the room for 8 hours to learn about vodka or orange juice. I mean, even vodka and orange juice. It's amazing how, on the one hand, wine is certainly hedonistic, although nobody needs any help with that part of it. But it is, it's the most spellbinding, intellectually speaking, of all beverages. You know, it always makes you wonder, why does it taste this way? Why do two vineyards right next door to each other taste so different? How, you know, vintage to vintage, how wines change. It's a world that is full of unending questions that make it a very rich world. I mean, one of the interesting things that is true of wine is that wine drinkers correlate demographically with people who are well educated and people who love to learn. People who are kind of lifelong learners tend to gravitate to wine.
That explains so much, Karen. That's interesting. Are you there?
It is, I think, yes.
Yeah, it does. It just, you know, and we're thinking, I was just thinking, my producer and I were just looking at each other like, including public radio listeners.
Yeah, there you go.
If you're listening to this show, you probably like wine or you'd like to learn more about it. The Wine Bible by Karen McNeil, she's with us today, by the way, is our gift to you at the $120 pledge level. Today is the second to the last day of our winter fund drive, and we need to raise $10,000 by 7 p.m. today. We are at $9,440. Thank you so much to everybody. It seems like a huge goal. It is a huge goal. We need everybody's help. We need you to pledge whatever you can afford. We appreciate every dollar. Every dollar goes to putting on the best programming, to purchasing the best programming for you to listen to on public radio, on WOSU. We have $9,440 to go today by 7 p.m. to put us in position to reach our overall goal for this drive, to make sure we can continue to give you the sort of programming that makes your day, the sort of programming that you tune into every day religiously, the sort of programming that Karen McNeil, a wine expert out in Napa Valley, that drives her to purchase a car almost purely on the basis of whether she can get her local radio station or not up in the mountains in Napa Valley or in the mountains in California where they grow the wine grapes. Make your pledge of support today, right now, at 1-866-897-9678 or go online at WOSU.org. Again, that number, 1-866-897-9678. Our gift to you for a pledge of at the $120 level is the Wine Bible. It has more than 900 pages with over 500 photographs, maps, and wine labels. There are also historical anecdotes, food pairing information, and great, great stories. It has sections on picking a wine glass, cleaning your wine glasses, and how to use a corkscrew. What makes a great wine? Karen McNeil, she's an expert at it. She has the answer. Karen is director of the wine program at the Culinary Institute of America in Napa Valley. She consults around the world and has written about wine for many, many different publications, from the New York Times to Food and Wine to Fine Cooking and Wine Spectator and many, many more. Give us a call, 1-866-897-9678, and make that pledge right now. I know that if you're listening, you care about public radio, and I know you want to help us make the goals that help us give you the sort of programming that matters to you every day. 1-866-897-9678. We just went to 9,040 for our goal for this. For the rest of the day until 7 p.m., $9,040 to go. Thanks to everybody for helping us out. Thanks to David in Columbus, Nicole in Columbus, and thanks to Peter in Kilbourne. And yes, okay, we have a phone call now. If you want to talk with Karen McNeil, give us a call at 1-614-292-8513. Hi, Jerry, you're on the air.
Good morning, Ms. Fisher and Ms. McNeil. Ms. Fisher, you've hit the trifecta 3 days in a row. Great program.
Oh, thank you, Jerry.
I'm not a great wine bibber, but I always like to have a bottle of Merlot in the house because I know red wine is good for your constitution or whatever.
That's what I say.
And by the way, I get a, I don't know if Ms. McNeil has heard of this place, Khan's, K-A-H-N-apostrophe-S, Chronicle with a K, over in Indianapolis. And they give all kinds of wine. In fact, they've got Dom Perignon 2000 gift set, $109, $329 if you want a case. But they got all these. I don't drink that kind of stuff. But the one thing I wanted to ask, by the way, years ago, I'm so old, I used to drink Mountain Moonlight, Monterey Pitcher, Virginia Dare. I don't think either one of you are old enough to remember those wines.
I remember Virginia Dare, yes.
You
indeed.
Do? Wow. Well, anyway,
she's an expert, Jerry.
that was, yeah, well, it's great. and they used to, I don't know if they still make Muscatel or not. Oh, before I ask the question, I want to tell you a story. You know, the American Navy sticks to bourbon, drinks bourbon. The British Navy drinks rum. The Italian Navy sticks to port, probably because it goes down easier. That's a little double entendre.
Okay.
My question is, yep. And I'll take the answer off the air, and as I say, another great program. But my question is Charles Shaw, you know, Two-Buck Chuck, mm-hmm. correct when he says that nobody should have to pay more than $10 for a bottle of good wine? And thank you very much. I'll take your answer off the air.
Thanks, Jerry, for the call. What about that, Karen?
Yeah, that's a very good question and a very complex question. I disagree completely. It is true that there are, for the most part, there are cheap versions of many things. I mean, for example, you could probably put a cheap sheet over yourself. You don't need to buy a jacket. And you certainly don't need to buy a $200 jacket when you could just wrap a sheet on yourself and keep warm and keep the rain off, right?
Mm-hmm.
But most of us would argue that, okay, yes, we, a sheet would probably work, but we really want something better than that. We want something that has more distinction, if you will. And so then, you know, maybe the next step up is a very inexpensive jacket, but certainly there are people who would be buying Armani jackets and very, you know, very fine detailed jackets as well. None of those things is wrong categorically. What I think is true is that the more you know about a topic, it could be anything, the more you know about cars, the more you know about carpets, the more you know about clothing, the more you know about shampoo, the more likely you are to see the qualities that are imbued in a fine product. If you know nothing about cars, then yes, any old clunker will get you from point A to point B. But if you have a great appreciation for cars, then every little detail of quality matters to you and is worth something. So for people who I think really understand wine, Two-Buck Chuck is not, it's not a very compelling wine. It's not a particularly good wine. It's not even a consistent wine. It's a little bit the kitchen sink leftover of grapes that, you know, were not used by other wineries. It's bought on what is called the bulk market, so little bits and snippets of leftover grapes all put together. You know, it's okay if you don't know very much about wine and that's your budget. I mean, I'm sure it's more than serviceable. But the more you know, the more about wine, the less likely you would be to be satisfied by a wine like that.
You know, that's kind of, I can't help but see all these parallels with public radio when it's membership drive week. And when you said you want something better, if you want something better with more distinction, and if you want something better with more distinction, you listen to public radio. There's no question about that. Once you know it's out there, people get sort of hooked on it. And you're willing to listen to it because, number one, it's commercial free and it's pleasanter right off the bat because of that. But folks also know that it's not free. They have to contribute. We need our help. We need the help of our listeners to make it what it is. Every day when you turn on the radio, it is that way because of you. The bulk of our support comes from our listeners. It doesn't come from the government. It doesn't come from underwriting. It comes from listeners, individuals just like you out there listening right now. We appreciate your support. But today is the second to the last day of our winter fund drive, and we need just about $9,000 by 7 p.m. today to put us in position to reach our overall goal for this drive. So make your pledge of support right now at 1-866-897-9678 or go online at WOSU.org because you want something better. You want something with more distinction. We want to give it to you. Help us help you. Go to 1-866-897-9678, or go online at WOSU.org. Today, our gift to you at this hour at the $120 pledge level is the Wine Bible. The Wine Bible is going to help you find something better, something with more distinction. It's going to bring more meaning to your life when it comes to the wine you drink. It is a really big book. I love these kind of reference books. It's timeless. The wine, the grapes don't, you know, the grapes that she talks about, they're still out there. They're still making them. The basic tenets of proper wine, I don't know if proper is the right word, but enriched wine drinking don't change. Kieran McNeil, author of The Wine Bible, is here talking with us right now about that. Her book, The Wine Bible, is our gift to you for your pledge at the $120 level. Today, reminder that today is the second to the last day of our winter fund drive, and we need to raise just about $9,000 by 7 p.m. today. When you make your pledge at 1-866-897-9678 or go to WOSU.org, you can leave comments. And of course, people who make pledges usually like what they're hearing. So we're not taking away the bad comments. We're just reading one of the good ones from Samir in Columbus. He writes, I have been listening to NPR for the past couple of years, and I love it. My favorites are BBC News, Marketplace, and All Sides with Ann Fisher. I am the first time contributor. Thanks for all the great work your team is doing for me and others. And Samir, you are so very welcome. I love hearing that. I'm so glad you like the show. We work every day to make it meaningful and to make it something better, something more distinctive for our listeners. Listeners, if this is what you like, if you love your public radio station, show your support now. Call 1-866-897-9678 or go to WOSU.org. You can also call us to talk to Kieran McNeil right now at 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@WOSU.org. Remember to make your pledge, 1-866-897-9678. And Mike, you're on the air. You want to talk American wine?
Yes. Most wines are too sour for me, and I was wondering if your guests would know a real low acid wine that's made in America.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, among all of the, if you look at all the wines made in the world, the U.S. usually makes wines that are already on the low in acidity side. In fact, acidity is often added to American wines because they are naturally pretty low in acidity. But I think maybe what you would want to do is stay with a few varieties that are in particular low in acidity. And do you prefer red wines or white?
Yeah, red, but I'll do either one as long as it's, not sour.
Right. Sour is a tough word because sour implies a real, an extremely negative aspect.
That's what I get from most wines.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
You know, have you tried any Zinfandels? Zinfandel, it tends to be very low in acid and very forward in its rich fruitiness. So it's more like jam than it is like, like anything that is acidic.
Okay, Zinfandel. Yeah, I don't think I've tried that.
Yeah, give it a try. You might like it.
Are there the sherry or the port, are those low acid?
The sweeter styles are low in acid, although with sherry, the dry styles are very high in acid, so I don't think you'd want to go there.
Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Mike, for your call. My guest is Kieran McNeil. She's the author of The Wine Bible. Kieran is a wine expert. Give us a call at 614-292-8513. If you would like to speak with Kieran, if you have a question or comment, she knows it all. It's all in her wine Bible, too. It's a very, very big book. She worked on it for a decade before it was published. It's filled with information, timeless information. It never goes out of style, never wears out. It is our gift to you at the $120 pledge level. Call 1-866- 877-897-9678. We're still at that $9,000 level. We need to have $9,000 to go by 7 p.m. today to put us in position to reach our overall goal for this drive. Make your pledge of support right now at 1-866-897-9678. Show that you care about things being a little bit better, more distinctive. That's why you listen to public radio. Karen, let's talk about vintages and what they mean. That definitely throws me off as your basic average wine consumer. How can you possibly remember what year something is?
Yeah, it's very difficult, but more than difficult, it's probably not very necessary. Historically, in particular, British wine experts would make sort of a big deal out of, this was the vintage of the century, and watch out for this vintage. And if you drank wine from all over the world, I mean, it would be just mathematically impossible to keep all these vintages in your mind. But the truth is that most people today are drinking what is currently on the market. And if you order a bottle of Sauvignon Blanc in a restaurant and the waiter comes over to you and says, you know, we don't have any 2007 anymore. We just got a new order and it's 2008. Most people aren't going to worry about that. Most people are going to just simply say, okay, 2008, I guess it is. And that's correct. Vintages are never categorically great and terrible. What vintages are a big gray area in between. Every year the grapes are a little bit different. But if you like a producer and you like a certain brand, the vast likelihood is that you will like that brand no matter what the vintage is. So as one gets more and more knowledgeable, sometimes it's interesting to memorize a vintage or two. But generally speaking, it's a big worry that people have that they shouldn't. It's something that I would throw that little, vintage chart tucked away in your wallet away, and I wouldn't worry about it.
Speaking of ordering wine in restaurants, it's bad enough to go into a wine shop and order and pick out a bottle, but ordering in restaurants could be even worse. And what should we know about that when we're doing it? What are they doing when they put the cork down? And I know you're supposed to smell it, but what are you smelling for?
Yeah, well, actually, you're not supposed to smell it.
Okay,
It's an old custom to put the cork down in front of you,
okay.
But you're not expected to do anything.
Okay.
You're not expected to pick it up, feel it, smell it, do anything. That practice, by the way, dates from hundreds of years ago when sort of nobility would just look at the cork to see that it was branded.
Huh.
The same as the label on the bottle, which meant that nobody had tampered with the wine.
Oh.
So it's a very, very archaic old custom. But today it's done just for tradition, but you needn't do anything with the cork. But I think your comment about restaurant wine lists is right on. Restaurant wine lists are difficult to understand, and there are, again, you have to have sort of the fearless courage of a 4-year-old looking up at the big Baskin-Robbins board and just try something new, or if it's an important occasion, then you can always call the restaurant ahead and ask for recommendations. And if it is, if you can't do that, then I have a great tip that if you want to abdicate entirely, which is just ask what the chef drinks.
Ah, well, I usually ask for a recommendation when I go, and then I give them a price range that I can afford.
Yeah, that's good.
One time I did that, and they brought the wine, and I tasted it, and it didn't taste right to me. And I told him I was a little stressed out, but I told him because I thought I'd spent like $20 or something on the bottle of wine, and gosh, I mean, I didn't want to not drink it because I didn't like it. And they brought me another bottle, and then I realized that it wasn't right. It was that my palate or something was tainted, and after a little while, it tasted a lot better, and I felt so badly, and I told them that I think I made a mistake, and they were, don't worry about it, no problem. If you go to the right place, is that the way it should be?
Yeah, well, I feel badly for restaurants in this regard.
I do too. I felt terrible.
You should be able to send back a wine that is flawed. But if one merely doesn't like the style of the wine, then, you know, the correct thing to do would be to offer to pay for it, of course, mm-hmm. But to say, you know, it's a little bit like, gee, I just ordered sweetbreads. I've never tried them before, but having tasted them now, I realize I don't like sweetbreads. Mm-hmm. Could I order a steak? You know, you would expect to pay for,
sure, of course,
for both of them. But if the wine is actually flawed, then obviously the restaurant will very willingly take it back because they in turn are going to give it back to their distributor,
okay,
who in turn is going to give it back to the producer, the winery. And it's the winery who is going to ultimately absorb the cost of that flawed wine.
Yeah, I thought it was flawed, and they were very, very gracious about it. And they said, don't worry, well, you know, it's fine. And I was an honest mistake, but it certainly pegged me as a neophyte. I want to thank a few folks right now. We have about $8,500 to go today before 7 p.m. Today is the second to the last day of our winter fund drive. We need to raise $8,500 now by 7 p.m. today to put us in position to reach our overall goal for this drive. I want to thank Richard and Beverly in Columbus, and thanks as well to Kathleen and Louise in Worthington. Thank you so much for your support of public radio right now. We have about 3 minutes to go in this hour. Show your support. Show that you enjoy what you're hearing right now, that this matters to you, that this is important. Show this is your time to tell, to kind of like, put your money where your mouth is. Let your dollars be your vote. Cast them for public radio now at 1-866-897-9678. Don't wait. We need to know that you're there for us now. 1-866-897-9678. At the $120 pledge level, our gift to you today, The Wine Bible by Karen McNeil. Karen is my guest today. We're talking about all sorts of stuff. I could probably have turned this into a two-hour show, Karen, because I'm not getting to half of my questions. Karen is an expert at wine. She has written The Wine Bible. She spent 10 years researching it, traveling around the world, as well as the United States, to put this together. It has everything you need to know about buying wine. It also tells you how to use the book in the first place. Give us a call at 1-866-897-9678. We have $8,400 to go. Thanks to Elise and Mark and Dennis in Lancaster. Thanks so much for your support. Down there in Lancaster, 1-866-897-9678. We have about a minute and a half to go. Appreciate it. Pick up the phone, 1-866-897-9678, or call 614-292-8513 to talk to Karen. We're running out of time, though. I think probably only have time for one more call. And Christina, you're on the air. We have about a minute to go.
Yes. Hi, Ann and Karen. I had a question for Karen about what she feels about the new twist-off top wine bottles. I know that they keep the wine better, or it's how the winer or the vineyard wanted their wine to taste, but I can't get over the fact that when it comes to my table, I feel like somebody's opening an arbor mist and pouring it into my glass.
It's killing my cork collection, too, by the way.
Yeah. You know, I understand that feeling because it's a little bit sad to let the tradition of corks go, but the new screw caps are not your old grandmother's screw cap. These are very expensive, by the way. They're more expensive than corks, so wineries don't do it to save money. I must say, I love them because, you know, who knows how many people don't drink wine because they just don't like the idea that you need a special tool, a corkscrew, to open the bottle.
Right.
I think many of the many great quality wines are now served in screw cap bottles.
Karen,
and I love it.
I got to cut you off there. Thanks so much. You've been a wonderful guest today.
My pleasure.
This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.